you have to start now. You have to download ChatGPT, Perplexity, and Google Gemini. Every time you try to do something new, think to yourself, can AI help you? Do not bury your head in the sand, because these phones and the way that you do life right now is going to change. You don't really have a say about it. You just need to jump on the train right now before it goes completely without you, and all of a sudden you're left thinking, how am I actually going to start catching up with everybody else?
Hey, Josh here. Before we dive into today's episode, I just wanted to say this. It takes 6 months to change your life, and I don't say that lightly. The inspiration for today's podcast was listening to a Diary of a CEO episode yesterday, where something just clicked. The future stopped feeling like some distant concept and started feeling like tools that I can use right now. And once you see it that way, it is hard to go back. Today's guest is Marnie Wills, an AI strategist working deep with small businesses, white label tools, and what she calls her curiosity first workflows. If you're sitting on the edge right now, wondering if you're too late or it is too technical, this episode should flip that completely. You're listening to The Real AI Diaries. Let's get into it. Hey, Marnie, it's great to have you on the podcast. Really looking forward to this one.
Thanks so much for having me, Josh. The time zones have made it a little bit difficult, but we're here, ready to go.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle with the time zones, but I'm glad we could get this going. And I think it's a real sort of issue that I'm really passionate about in terms of these next critical months. And just looking back, the next podcast guest that I had, he mentioned Deep Utopia. And there was a book by a certain author that he mentioned. And I think that book, when I initially heard him talk about it, it sort of waved over my head. And then I recently listened to the Diary of a CEO podcast with Mo Gadwat. And that was all about how do we structure this society, and when these new general purpose technologies, which are ironically called GPTs as well, they all often come in waves and just restructure everything. With the internet, from there was those pictures of, even in the industrial age, there was those pictures of the roads with the horses. And there was one year where there were all horses, and by the next year, it was all cars. And I think these are the critical 6 months that is just going to be absolutely important for us to get right in terms of business, in terms of how we can make sure that we restructure the roles that exist within our businesses to make them more productive, but also more effective and amplifying what's meaningful. In terms of individuals, making sure that you don't feel that fear of missing out and you make sure that you maximize what you can do with AI. And for just general people that are on the edge, these next 6 months are something that you won't want to miss. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation, Marnie. Could you just provide a bit of a background on the current things that you're seeing right now? I know that you work with a lot of these small and medium-sized businesses. And I think from a big organizations, Sam Altman said that working with big organizations is a lot slower to adapt to this technology. And the small and medium-sized businesses are sort of working better. But what's up in your world right now? How are the businesses that are working with you adapting to this revolution? And yeah, so please provide some context with us and how you are viewing this amazing time that we are living in.
Yeah, it is an awesome time, I must say. Right, so there's probably a few different types of business leaders that I'm working with at the moment. I've got quite a few who are overwhelmed because of the rate of acceleration of generative AI within us using it in life and business. So they are a little bit overwhelmed, feeling like they're constantly behind and often burying their head in the sand. Then I've got the business owners who basically are putting up a bit of a barrier and saying, I can't use that AI because of data protection and cybersecurity, you know, and they're waiting for somebody else to find the answer for them. Or they're working in a very restrictive industry. A lot of financial services are restricted industries, a lot of law, and there's a lot of big kind of law companies starting their own kind of AI tool to sell, and then people are waiting for those. If I'm honest, those people will be waiting a while. Like you said, corporates are a little bit slower and they will get left behind. So often I'll work with the individual there and we won't talk about using it in business. We'll talk about enhancing their AI literacy for themselves, and become leaders, you know, almost like an AI mentor within their business, all about how they use AI and thinking outside the box in the way that they have an AI first mindset. And then when finally their kind of industry catch up, they'll be ahead of the game. Still some work to do there. And then lastly, you know, I get really excited when somebody says to me, yeah, I use ChatGPT all the time. And I'm like, oh, okay, amazing. Have you customized your AI? Have you customized ChatGPT? Have you got projects set up? Have you got some GPTs? Are you using agents like GenSpark or the agent within ChatGPT? Do you know about study mode? You know, have you got scheduled tasks? Like, and I just rattle them off all the capabilities of one Gen AI tool. Or I say to a lot of people who are already quite advanced, I say, okay, well, we're moving into AI agent world. It's time to take your data off ChatGPT, have your own AI model of which you own the chat. You can white label one. I build white label AI tools for companies and for people so they can use all AI models from OpenAI to Anthropic, and then they can create their AI assistants. And then when some of their teammates are using the chat, they can see that and they can use that data to train agents. And of course, that kind of blows over people's mind because they think they're kind of nailed, you know, ChatGPT, and then realize that they've still got a little bit of work to do. So they're kind of the three kind of leaders that I work with.
Yeah, I love that. And there's so many things to pick apart there. But I'll start with that third person that's going in and they are just all in with this tool and they really want to know AI literacy. But on this podcast, I'd like to make sure that it's very accessible and people can understand what the practical implementations are. So with AI literacy, from my perspective, I've just sort of started taking up coding and learning these skills on how to build those tools. And from that side of it, there seems to be a divide in terms of people that are going deep into the technical side of it. People that are wanting to build these tools, they're going to go deep into the technical side of it, or people that can go on the AI literacy side of it, how to prompt, how to make her have a clear message. And you've worked with these technologies, you've white labeled them. And once you set up that tool, without the technological side of it for them, what does the AI literacy mean? And what are the skills that you are teaching at the moment, as well as the mindset on being literate with AI and communicating with these technology effectively so you can get the right action that you want?
Yeah. So I have a little bit of a framework that I use, and I always start with the mindset around an abundance and curiosity mindset to get to the point where we have an AI first mindset. And that AI first mindset is, can AI do this, collaborate with me, and do this better, faster, and likely more creative? So that's the mindset we need. Anytime I'm thinking about doing anything, from, believe it or not, planning a holiday next week to, you know, to thinking about a new workshop I'm going to write, it is always, what AI tool can help me do this better, faster, and likely more creative? And if you can always have that, and I say to a lot of my clients, put a little sticky note. When I first started a couple of years ago, I even had it on my phone. I had like a screensaver that says, can AI help me? ? Because it is, we have to reprogram our brain, especially if you're a little bit of an older generation of you're used to doing your workflows the way you do it. You have to change your operating system. And you remember, generative AI is changing our human operating system. It's changing the way that we access information, the way that we communicate with each other, and the way that we make decisions. So that's really important that we get that AI first mindset. The next thing that's very important is the security, data security. We know it is now very clear that ChatGPT is sharing our data. So do you have a Teams account? You know, Anthropic is much safer at the moment. We are doing a lot of connectors, okay? So we are connecting our Gmail accounts to all of our AI models. Is that safe? And then the next thing is around your questioning. There's a lot of frameworks around prompting, so the way you communicate with AI, but I'm going to be a little bit controversial and say, I don't think you need them. And I don't think you need them if you are creating AI assistants that have knowledge base and have context. Now that knowledge base is giving that AI assistant a particular role. And those AI assistants can either be projects within your AI model, or they can be trained GPTs. They're really, really similar. I tend to stick with the projects because the projects chat.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, it creates your knowledge base and it retrains your AI assistant, whereas the GPTs is very static. Yeah, it does. Yeah. And it's very static.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. Because I was sort of exploring that, like custom GPTs in projects sort of seem the same. And I tried it once, like putting in the same prompt in with the same project files. And I didn't know that it was different. Do you advise people to use projects?
I do. And I get really annoyed when business coaches sell all their GPTs. And I think once your GPT link is available to the public, anyone can use it. So why are you putting it behind a paywall? I get very frustrated with that. But anyway, yes, projects over GPTs if you're using them in-house, so it's for your own. If you're sharing and you don't have a Teams account and you don't need it for a Teams account, then you could create a GPT. So if we wanted to, you know, share the same resources or we wanted to use a GPT together, we could create one and then we use it. But the chats that we use do not save to memory. In projects, the chats save to memory. And more importantly, in the projects, you can change the model that you use and you can use all the tools. So you could use the deep research tasks within the tools. And then if you go and open a general chat and you think, oh, actually, this belongs in this project with this AI assistant, you can just click the three dots and say add to project. So definitely a big part of AI literacy is the use of AI. I call them AI assistants, but let's just say the projects or the GPTs, because you give them knowledge base and it retrains on that knowledge base and you give it custom instructions. Now, generative AI is amazing and it can do a whole lot of things. So that's what prompt engineering was about. It was about giving it a context and a role, right? And giving it the information. Yeah. And I think that AI models are so much smarter now that actually you do need a little bit of ideas about prompting, but I wouldn't over-exaggerate it. Just create projects for different tasks that you want to do. I've got a LinkedIn strategist. I've got a thought leader. I've got a CEO board. You know, I've got my email newsletter writer assistant. I've got my workout buddy. You know, I've got about 28 to 30 of them. That is how you really do it. And then the last bit of the piece of AI literacy is around the abundance of there is an AI tool for that. Like there is a site called There's an AI Tool for That. It's got hundreds of thousands of AI tools. And if you just think, I need to do this task, is there an AI tool for that? There likely is, or you could probably create one, right? So we know my favorite at the moment is Lovable, creating apps all by natural language. So on the weekend, I was coaching a international touch football team at the Youth Atlantic Cup, and I created on Lovable a mental fitness app for them to do in the morning and the evening. You know, for my 8-year-old daughter, I created a languages and maths app, very easy, all just using the agent within there and talking like a person, like I was saying, like it was my developer. So I think that's really important to know that there's an abundance of things that you can now do and you don't need the technical elements to do it. You just need the mindset of curiosity.
I love that, Marnie. And I think the abundance mindset, I want to get into that later, but I love the point. And I know you're not trying to be controversial, but I think that's so true. Like prompt engineering, I see all these LinkedIn posts of people sharing prompts and like putting ChatGPT prompts in their notes and then like using it every now and then. But I'm going to go out and say that context over prompts is what you really need to do. And even for this, it might not be very like authentic, but even for this podcast, I made a GPT to do research on the guests and come up with a script of stuff that I can talk about. And it has the context of everything that I can talk about. It has a knowledge base of all the different things that I can talk about. And then I upload the name of the guest and it goes through that process. It's basically like an automation where it just goes through a specific way that I want it to do it and it's got the knowledge, and then there's no need to do that prompt engineering because you've got all the context that it needs to do. And I think that's a real thing that people just get stuck up over, especially new people. Like they see this ChatGPT prompt will help you. Like, no, if you have the context, I think a main thing for people is setting up that context, setting up the files, and it's definitely worth it. I'm not sure if the free version of ChatGPT has projects, but it doesn't. Yeah, it's definitely worth the investment. And every time that you use ChatGPT, I think that it's 100% more useful if you go straight to a project. And then also the thing that I'm thinking about next is the memory. And if it can evolve with the memory is interesting. And that would be really useful just for general talk to understand you. And then also for those specific tasks as well. So I think if you're not using that right now, it's definitely something to consider and use right now.
And I would go a step ahead and say it's the knowledge base that actually is the most important bit to update, because we as humans have domain expertise. It's our knowledge and our experience and our perspective. And every day we are adding to our domain expertise. And this is why I think it's important to be updating that knowledge base. And I'll walk you through a quick AI powered workflow that I've got. But before I do, I'll say the reason that AI content gets so much, I don't know, negative press. Oh, you wrote that by AI. It's because somebody puts in, write me a blog post, you know, about, I don't know, write me a blog post about using AI at school, just as an example, right? And then it, AI puts out this content. And then the human that wanted that blog post written hasn't added any domain expertise. It's not added its own knowledge, experience and expertise, because it hasn't gone back to AI and said, oh, that's an interesting perspective. Ask me questions about how I feel about that. And if they don't do that, there's no domain expertise. If you do that, the AI asks you questions, you answer it, and all of a sudden the blog post has more context and more knowledge base and more human touch. And then there, that then puts the content goes out online, and all of a sudden AI has new content that it wasn't its own. And that is how we change the loop. But too many people are being lazy users and aren't adding their domain expertise. So we're just getting AI after AI after AI. And that's the frustration that a lot of marketers especially are facing. So a good AI powered workflow that I use is I have a GPT, like you mentioned, which is my podcast pitcher, which is how I get on podcasts like this. And it has context, be an expert podcast pitcher that can promote Marnie and XYZ, everything that way. And then the knowledge base, all of my knowledge, experience, my programs, everything. But here's the thing, I add Zapier. So every time I get a podcast episode, Zapier takes the transcription and uploads it to the knowledge base of that GPT. And therefore my VA, who does my podcast pitching for me, she goes away, she takes the podcast episode, she puts it in Perplexity. Perplexity takes all the information. She puts that information into the GPT. The GPT matches all of my knowledge base that I keep updating and the context, and then spits out a pitch for the podcast. And it takes her about 5 minutes per podcast that she pitches to. Thank you. And that is an AI powered workflow that has updated knowledge base.
Yeah, you might need to send that one to me, honey, because I think that would be very useful to sort of that transcripts that can sort of evolve with you. And I think the part of that I really liked what you were saying is that you take the domain expertise and then you give it to the AI that can then make the final product. And I think basically what we often do with copywriters is we take our domain expertise, our raw insight, our knowledge, and then copywriters finalize it, or whether it's anything else like, I don't know, education, you've got a unique insight and you need to learn it. Like writing the notes is just the way of presenting that information, and the actual insight that you have is what makes you unique. And I think as AI develops, it'll really expose those people who don't have the domain expertise. And in the Mo Gadwat, I know you know who he is. He's a Google executive who was concerned with the implications of AI, and he's now going on lots of podcasts talking about the implications. And I think that aspect of what the domain expertise is going to expose people is you'll leave the experts who know everything, and they'll be the ones that can run the automations. And the word automation involves the fact that the person that's running it doesn't really add that much to the automation, and they don't have the meaning behind it. And my idea around where AI is heading, at least in the short term, is that it's amplifying the meaningful stuff that you do and eliminating the meaningless stuff. So as long as you're sitting in that domain expertise role, I think if you're really scared, if you're really confused, just fall back on your domain expertise. There's no point of optimizing the AI tools yet. It's important to fall back on the actual expertise that you're developing. And we were just talking off camera on how these junior roles are being restructured. And I think it's because they don't have that domain expertise yet. They haven't gained that true mastery. And I think it's really interesting how those junior roles are going to be restructured. And in the podcast that I was listening to, they were basically describing a utopia, a world where the work that you do, and once you get an AI that has 60,000 IQ, it's more useful than everything in knowledge work, and you've really got to restructure. Obviously, that 60,000 is a long way in the future, but as it develops, some of the work that's currently being done by junior roles is very, very meaningless and not very productive to the development of these individuals. And me, like, I'm 17, I'm really interested in how I can boost my knowledge. One of my ideas for a startup is involving education and making sure that the education we do prepares us for the future of work. And I was wondering what sort of insights you have working with small businesses are involved around restructuring the type of work that's being done. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's going to take your job, or somebody using AI is going to take your job. But social media marketers didn't exist 50 years ago. And I think that's a really interesting way to look at it in the long term of the history of things and what the next future of roles will involve.
Yeah, I really do want to answer that question. But if it's okay, I'd love to add a different perspective with regards to you saying about domain expertise with being younger, because I actually fundamentally disagree. I think the best, two reasons. One is I work with a lot of businesses, and the businesses that have all of the different generations working together are generally the most successful, because everybody, regardless of their age, regardless of their industry, expect it, brings something to the table. And I particularly love working with your generation, Gen Alpha, because for me, your generation is really, and I know I've overused this word, but super curious. But also, I love the fact that they try and they almost work with their head and their heart. Like, they're really invested in what they're doing, and they try to use their head to work out what's going on or how to get better. It's almost like they're naturally born like high performers looking for that 10% edge. And I love it. And I think that actually, if you want to know what your domain expertise is, if you're a little bit of a younger generation, go to your AI model and just get it to ask you a shite lot of questions. Just rattle it off, you know, like, ask me a question where I learned something new. Ask me where I added in my experience. Like, because you probably got it in your head and you probably have all the experiences you've had. You just don't know how to get it out, and you don't know how to link it to an industry or link it to an outcome. Yeah, I actually disagree. I think that the youth, well, I say youth, but you know, everybody of any industry years of experience brings something to the table. And then to answer your question around, you know, what should people be thinking about in terms of business? Well, if we go back to the principles of business, all good, successful businesses start from solving a problem. What is the problem out there? And then what are the steps, reverse engineer it to be able to solve it. And I think the Gen Alpha generation, we spoke about this before pressing record, the Gen Alpha who were 2010 to 2023, I think, born, they will start to enter the workforce by 2030, and 64% of their jobs do not currently exist. So we don't know what your jobs are going to look like, but that's okay, because all you have to do is be curious about what problems you can solve. And the changes in industry used to stay in a job for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. That is no longer. Just think in 3-year increments maximum. Don't think any further. 100%. Just think it's not forever. It's just for now. Think 3 years. Let me solve a problem in the next, like, let me solve a problem now. Build on it for maximum 3 years. Exit. Go somewhere else. Do the same thing.
Yeah, 100%. And even that LinkedIn post by Reid Hoffman, he's talking a lot about the career ladder no longer being a thing. It'll just be lots of projects solving problems. And also, I like that you never underestimate young people. I love that. And staying curious. I've got this GPT set up, but which I even fine-tuned. If the audience doesn't know, there's a way that you can make the custom GPT a bit more elaborate, and I create a certain type of file that you can provide, which is basically examples of how it should respond. And you can fine-tune it by providing it those examples, and then you have the context and the system prompts. And I saw this article on Socratic tutoring methods of asking you questions to challenge your assumptions and challenge the way that you're thinking, rather than just putting it into a chatbot and just offloading all of the thinking yourself. And I think that's a great way to start by learning this content. Instead of one thing to change right now that you can do is, instead of asking you to do it for you in terms of learning, in terms of staying curious, ask it to ask you questions about the content to make sure that you really understand it. And I think that's a good aspect. And as on the point of the 64% of jobs that won't exist by 2030, the problem that I was discussing with my dad yesterday was, if this does evolve and there's this world that we don't know what happens, there's the idea of labor arbitrage, which is that people are tied to the outcomes that they produce. And the outcomes, whether that be business problems, whether that be specific things that they do for people, people are unfortunately tied to that outcome. And in order to provide a universal basic income, they are tied to the outcome that they produce. And I think in that world where an outcome can be provided at a lower cost, what are the types of problems that people would need to solve is something that I'm really sort of interested in. How do the problems change than what we think they are today?
That's really interesting. And I think actually, I think that looks a bit blurry for us all, because we haven't quite seen what generative AI is doing to life and business. But what I will say, quite controversially, is courses are dead. The way that we learn is changing. You've already touched on it. You get AI to ask you questions. ChatGPT, Gemini already have a study mode. It doesn't give you the answers. It creates questions for you to think about what you know already and then helps you fill the gap. So I think we're very much moving to like an AI learning, tutor learning style. I'm not 100% sure what that will look like yet, but I do know that courses are dead. And what I say to a lot of my business clients who have a lot of intellectual property, I say it's time to create an AI model of you or your framework or your business of which people are able to access. And I had a bit of an idea for you actually while you were talking to monetize the Real AI Diaries. You could take all of your transcripts and you could put all of your transcripts into a GPT and connect it to, say, you built it on Lovable, have people sign in. It could be a little Patreon, you know, little, I don't know, I'm a couple of YouTube. Got a couple of Patreon through there, so really cheap, you know, $7.99 a month or something, and then they get access to the agent that that can sift through all of your podcast episodes, right, and be questioning them about where they could be adding AI, you know, real AI to their life and business. So that's a thought. There you go.
Wow, solving problems live. But yeah, the thing that I was thinking about when you're saying the courses are dead, I actually read an article the other day that basically was challenging what you were saying and controversialing against the controversial in terms of that courses as they are today are dead, because the core assumption behind a course is that you have to teach to the middle of the road person, and you just have to assume that you're teaching to that middle road of the person. If somebody's smarter than that middle of the road, you just have to cop it and you just have to learn at that average. If you're not as intellectual as the middle of the road, you just, it's really difficult for you to keep up. And so the idea of memory, the idea of personalizing it to the level that you're at is what will make courses good. And the Zapier Lovable combination for me would be cool if it could understand some sort of onboarding of where they're at right now. Even like, are you a business person or are you an individual? That would massively change the type of response that would make it useful and effective for the user. And I think that sort of idea, not just in education, but in other aspects of work, is really important in that memory, in that personalization. Because the problem with the ChatGPT study mode at the moment is that you have to upload every question, or you have to constantly upload it, and you have to just assume that it knows what you did beforehand. And the long-term memory is getting better, and there's associations with that of self-learning AI. That's a different story. But that idea of having something that you can work with that understands all the context, it understands where you're coming from as a business, all your project files, whether that be like a vector database or something, where it can have all that information and knows where you're at and can provide some insight on that, is something that, you know, is really concerning in terms of what the actual implications are. And the podcast yesterday was talking about how even CEOs will be overrun, in that they will just have all the information, all the context, And there's no amount of experience that you can have that will be able to override the intelligence of the system. And if that is the case, there has to be something else that makes the human more valuable.
I think I believe that our use of generative AI will actually enhance our human connection, because we will be able to outsource or leverage AI for the day-to-day things that we use. I think this phone is going to be absolute. We're very used to in our phones all the time, not looking up. You know, somebody, you're talking to somebody and you check your phone anyway. I think in 5 years' time, roughly, we'll see a complete change in the way we interact with each other. So therefore, I guess to slightly answer your question of, you know, will the human be, you know, where does the human still come in? We come in by the point of being able to give back to our community and to have connection, and remember that every human, one of our kind of human needs is to be seen and heard. We all want to be seen and heard, and that's often where our purpose comes from. So I think if we're able to give each other more time to be seen and heard, I think we're going to actually thrive as a generation.
And more time to be seen and heard. Everybody wants to like and love and be loved. Everybody wants that connection. And I think, yeah, spot on. And that power and status stuff, unfortunately, comes along with that in terms of people want to be seen as valued than other people. Like if everybody had a Ferrari, Ferraris would no longer have its value. And true. I think you've got to restructure it in a way that makes the connection important and it makes it valuable, but then also allowing for a way that people can still have that status hierarchy. Because if you don't have that, then there could be a lot of danger. And the history tells you that humans don't act as they say. Like whatever they say, there's a croc brain, a primal brain that's gone through thousands of years of evolution in the wild that doesn't agree with what the new brain says in its mind in terms of connection and love.
It's going to be really difficult, I think. There's going to be a very up and down period, I believe, because you know, Bill Gates has said, and Vishen from Mindvalley have said, we're moving to, you know, a 2 or 3 day work week. We are changing the way that we have been revolutionized to work Monday to Friday. You know, that's been around since the industrial age, if not before. We're going to go through a change where some people will feel lost. They won't know what to do. Some people will work anyway and overwork. And then hopefully my hope is that we go back to our entrepreneurial roots of, you know, back before any type of money exchange, it was you would be entrepreneurial. You would make or grow something to sell to then get something else. It was an exchange of services and creation. That's where we started in our communities. So, you know, I'm hoping with the use of AI, we can be much more entrepreneurial and get rid of the corporate kind of status and the working all the time and come back to providing within our communities. And almost, you know, it's a very, I'm not very cultural, so I hope I don't mess this up, but it's a very Jewish culture to create for your community and buy and sell within your community. And they are one of the wealthiest cultures around, you know, and I really do hope that generative AI kind of leads us down that safe, community-driven human connection route, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, well, that's true. The Jewish stats behind the wealth is like something like 2% of the global population and something like 20% of billionaires or something like that, which is crazy. And even like the Amish living off the land, living for community. But what if somebody doesn't want to be an entrepreneur?
Well, every entrepreneur needs, you know, workers to work within their businesses. Like that.
Yeah.
How do we have workers? Well, it was an entrepreneur that created a business. So you have to have both.
Yeah. Well, it's just an increase in the amount of people that have to be entrepreneurs because the service, the whole thing of the different projects, working for the problems and working day by day for the community is something that will have to be a lot. And I think a lot of people will be exposed in terms of that selfish greed that they have, and living for the community and living for other people will end up being a priority for people as the as the world shifts in its priorities as it has to.
Yeah. It's an exciting time to be alive, like you said.
Yeah, exciting time, ups and downs. And so to finish this off, I'll have a quick fire questions. I know that you grew up in Australia and you are a teacher of education, sport. So what is a coaching principle from sport that you use in business today?
Coaching principle. That is a very tricky one. There's many.
Coaching.
Yeah. For me, I think it's always strategy. Like in coaching, you're always trying to work out how to outwit the opponent, which translates to business. How are you trying to become more efficient in business or creative? Is creative and efficient are the two things that businesses need. Creative is normally leads to more business and lead generation, and efficiencies normally bring the cost down, and those two alone transfer back to outwitting an opponent. How are you trying to be creative in how you beat them, and how are you trying to do that efficiently?
Interesting answer, and also thinking on your feet with that creative side of it, but then also doing like the gym work and everything. That's a good answer. So
thanks.
My next question, no worries. And my next question is, what's one belief about tech that you've had that you've completely unlearned throughout your career?
I don't know if I've unlearned it, but I've changed my mindset around it. I honestly used to think I wasn't techie. And to this day, I even reply with not techie, but here's my thought on it. I didn't think I was non-techie because I didn't adopt technology early. I always thought I was a late adopter. Like, you probably don't remember this, but there was something called a BlackBerry. Well, I was the one on the BlackBerry that, you know, was a late adopter to a smartphone, so an iPhone. So in my head, I thought I wasn't techie. You know, I was the one that didn't know how to fix the printer at school when, you know, all the teachers were like, you know, I don't know. I just, in my head, I just believed that that wasn't. But it's also because I wasn't curious enough, whereas technology is exactly what we do. You know, maps, Alexa, the way we use Sky TV, you know, even the microwave and washing machine were technology back in the day, like, you know, so it was all just about changing my mindset. Something can be techie, but it's only technical for somebody who doesn't yet know how to use it, or not curious enough to want to learn or ask questions about. So I guess I've just changed my belief around what being techie is. Being techie is just being curious about how something works. I don't know how to always do the doing. Like, I was thinking about it the other day. I'm in the process of setting up a whole lot of agents via Lindy and Relay, and I'm down the agents route and a few automations, and my brain doesn't naturally love that stuff. I love going to Lovable or Bolt and creating apps and webs and solving problems that way. My brain loves that. My brain doesn't love setting up automations and agents. But here's the thing. I've got a VA that can do it for me. I just have to know why we're doing it and the basis of how it's done, and then I can get someone else to execute it. So I've definitely just changed my mindset around what techie is.
Yeah. I mean, from being a late adopter to the internet to an early adopter to AI is very interesting. And I think to close it off, that idea of being curious, the idea of revolving around community, making sure that you stay on the high level. If somebody is confused, they're on the edge on why they should care about this technology, and they don't really know why it's useful for people. To finish this off, what's one simple thing that you would say to them in order to make them understand the importance of the current time?
Yeah. Okay. Said with love, everybody. Said with love. You have to start now. You have to download ChatGPT, Perplexity, and Google Gemini as a starting point on your phone. And every time you go to Google, go to Gemini or ChatGPT. Every time you try to do something new, think to yourself, can AI help you? Do not bury your head in the sand, because these phones and the way that you do life right now is going to change. You don't really have a say about it. You just need to jump on the train right now before it goes completely without you, and all of a sudden you're left thinking, how am I actually going to start catching up with everybody else?
I love that. Just start now. Just don't wait. Just don't wait for somebody to tell you that. Don't wait for your boss to implement an AI strategy plan. Just use it now. be curious and make sure that you're not one of the early adopters that has to think about this too late. I think for me, it's three sleepless nights. There's a book, Ethan Mollick, Living and Working with AI. That's what he says. That's three sleepless nights is what you need to understand the importance of AI. And I think that is very important. Make sure that you have those nights, those understanding of its importance before it is too late. So thank you, Marnie, for coming on the podcast. Is there any way that people can find your content or research what you're about?
Yeah, sure. So Instagram, TikTok, I'm Business with AI Strategist. And I hang out on LinkedIn a lot. So it's Marnie Wills on LinkedIn.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Marnie.
Thanks for having me, Josh.